Tom Weber on NPR News. For the rest of this hour, we're going to look at a possible fix for climate change, removing carbon dioxide already in the air. Each year, humans add billions of tons of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, which is a main cause of climate change. But there are efforts out there to create devices and methods for pulling that carbon dioxide out of the air. And my next guest suggests that it's one of those ideas that world leaders already seem to be relying on to meet goals like the Paris Climate Accords. Elizabeth Colbert wrote about these effects in an issue this month of The New Yorker. The article is called "Can Carbon Dioxide Removal Save the World?" Elizabeth, good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Your questions for Elizabeth here, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTime1. Elizabeth, is this a new or newer idea, or has it actually been around for a while?
Well, it's been around, it's been around for a while. It's mainly been espoused by a physicist who works now at ASU, named Klaus Lackner. He was sort of one of the first people to say, this is something we really ought to be looking at, and the idea is, can you pull carbon dioxide directly out of the air? Once you've dumped it in there, it's very diffuse. The difficulty has to do with your basic sort of thermodynamics. It's very difficult once something has diffused to the atmosphere to get it back out. But Klaus has been working on it for a long time, and other people have joined in this search, in part, as I explained in the article, because it is... we've already dumped so much CO2 in the air that without pulling some of it out, it's very, very, very difficult for us to meet the goal of holding the average increase in global temperatures to under 2 degrees Celsius.
So remind us just how carbon dioxide contributes to climate change. Just start there.
Right. Well, carbon dioxide is what's called a greenhouse gas. This has been known really since the 1850s, and the principle here is pretty simple. What it means is that the Earth receives a lot of energy from the sun in the form of light, and carbon dioxide is transparent in that part of the spectrum, so it lets in the sunlight. And then what is also happening is, and this is the counterintuitive part, there's a lot of radiation leaving the Earth. The Earth is radiating out heat all the time. And those two energy streams, once again, this is a counterintuitive part, have to be equal, the sunlight hitting the Earth and the heat radiating out from the Earth. And what carbon dioxide does and other greenhouse gases is they trap that heat. They're opaque in the infrared part of the spectrum, okay, the heat part of the spectrum. And so that heat gets trapped near the Earth. And that is a fundamentally important effect. If we didn't have greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, so if all that heat were just streaming out into space, we could calculate mathematically what the temperature of the Earth would be. It's a fairly simple calculation, and it would be frozen. The Earth would be frozen. So greenhouse gases are super important to life as we know it.
So what is it that you talk about carbon dioxide removal? What is it? Explain the idea and the process.
Well, the idea is, you know, fairly simple. The idea is, can you get this carbon dioxide once you've emitted it? You know, so whenever we burn coal or oil or natural gas, we drive our cars and our trucks and our planes and make electricity, we dump a lot of CO2 into the air as a result of combusting fossil fuels. Can we then get that CO2 back? Now, on some level, that's always happening too. Plants are always taking up CO2, right? That's how, you know, photosynthesis works. But is there a way that we can, and there are many different possibilities out there, is there a way that we could somehow extract that CO2 from the air once it's up there?
And just to clarify, because I've already gotten the tweet about this, I mean, one option is to plant more trees, right? I mean, that would be one thing to do to take carbon dioxide out of the air. But you're actually talking about man-made options. Why do we have to think man-made instead of just planting more trees?
Well, I mean, one question is, you know, in a world of climate change, are you going to actually see, you know, forest die-offs? We actually already are. So, you know, forests take a long time to grow. When they actually reach equilibrium, you know, so when they're sort of fully matured, they're no longer taking up CO2. They're sort of at an equilibrium, but in the process of regrowing them. So reforestation is a very good idea and could potentially remove a significant amount of carbon from the air, but it takes a lot of land. You know, that kind of planting of forests or crops to take CO2 out of the air, you know, requires arable land. We're using a lot of our arable land right now to grow food, and we're going to, by a lot of estimates, need more of it to grow food as the human population grows.
What are the forms being tried and developed right now for these man-made, the subject of your article here in The New Yorker, which we've linked to? What are they doing? What gizmo do you build take it out of the air?
It can get a little, you know, chemically complicated, but one possibility is carbon dioxide is essentially an acid. You know, you dissolve it in water, you get carbonic acid. It's acidic, meaning it will be absorbed by a base. So one method uses very caustic chemicals, you know, not lye exactly, but close to lye, to pull the CO2 out of the air. It binds with this, you know, into this solution, and then you have to get the CO2 out of solution so you can reuse that solution to pull out more CO2. And it's a pretty energy-intensive process. That is the huge barrier here, right, is that if you're using energy to pull CO2 out of the air and the CO2 is put in there in the process of generating energy, you know, have you gained anything?
So how do you actually pull it out of the air? Is it just a big vacuum cleaner?
Okay, well, you know, I'll give you one facility I visited. As I say, there are different ways that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the I visited the plant of a startup company called Carbon Engineering, and what they're doing is essentially blowing air over and dripping this acidic solution down through, you know, sort of a container with a lot of complicated baffling in it, and blowing the air through it. And as the air hits this acidic solution, this basic solution, very alkaline solution, mm-hmm. sorry, apologies, the CO2, which, as I said, has acidic properties, gets absorbed.
So I'm almost picturing like a big wind tunnel, and you shoot the wind through, but this stuff is dripping down.
Right.
And it's kind of catching the carbon dioxide on the way down.
Right, exactly.
So does that mean that does carbon dioxide then become something else, or does it become just like a solid version that is no longer a threat?
Well, in once again, there are many ways to do this. In this particular process, it binds with calcium oxide, it becomes calcium carbonate, then it has to be heated. So that the process, and then the CO2 gets forced off of this. It becomes a solid, then you get the gas off through heat. That's where a lot of the energy comes from. And then you can reuse the calcium oxide, and then the process starts all over again. So it's quite a complicated, it's sort of a two rings of of chemical processing, and I don't think we want to get too deeply into
it. No. But it is interesting. I mean, you think about, you know, how do you trap, you know, what is the Sound of Music song? How do you trap a cloud,
right,
and pin it,
yeah,
down? Like you're talking about a gas out there.
Right.
How do you actually grab it? And I don't have enough science chops to know anything other than it's a cool thought to say,
right,
wait, you could actually try that.
Yes. And it's very, but I do want to say there are very high hurdles here. And the hurdles, you know, go back to also very basic sort of chemical and thermodynamic rules. And one of the really big hurdles here is that CO2, though it is having a powerful effect on our climate and though we've increased it by a dramatic amount, it only exists in our atmosphere at roughly 400 parts per million. So you have to force a lot of air across whatever, you know, medium you're using to try to trap that CO2 in order to, you know, get at the CO2. So a lot of air is being moved for no reason. It's not helping you at all. And that energy that you're using, that's a lot of energy. And,
right,
and so it's very hard. It's hard to make the math work out.
Right. If you're powering the machines to remove the carbon dioxide with power that came from a coal plant, well, then we've got a problem.
Exactly. And this is really envisioned. It's a pretty futuristic technology, and it's sort of envisioned for this time, which, you know, some people say, you know, is not that far away, and some people worry is far away, that, you know, we have gotten off of fossil fuels. And the problem is that even if we were to stop, you know, using fossil fuels pretty soon, we already have too much CO2 up there, and CO2 hangs around for a really long time. So it's a cumulative problem. So these people are thinking, okay, 20, 30 years from now, even if we've totally transformed our energy systems, which unfortunately, you know, we're not doing fast enough, we're still going to have this problem. So maybe we can use then at that point wind energy or solar energy to try to, you know, make up for past mistakes. But the longer, you know, we dump CO2 up there, the more we're going to have to pull out.
Yeah, on whatever day we get to 100% renewables, there's still going to be a bunch of stuff in the air that we have to address and bring out.
Exactly.
Elizabeth Colbert is with me, staff writer for The New Yorker. Earlier this month in one of the issues of the magazine, her article is called Can Carbon Dioxide Removal Save the World? Really interesting idea. We're taking your calls at 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you are driving. Brett is in Eau Claire. Hi, Brett. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. Alan Fabry and the Holistic Management Institute have come up with a pretty amazing idea that we already have the technology and we can utilize the energy from the sun with grazing animals and grasslands, specifically some of the marginal land in our across the globe that's not suited to crop production. We could increase with managed grazing the number of animals, employ people, grow food that can't grow crops off the same land, and sequester that carbon in the soil. I just wondered what your guests thought of ideas like that.
Yeah, Elizabeth, using animals and nature to help with this. We talked about that a little bit, but what of Brett's thought there?
Yeah, well, Alan Fabry's, you know, particular methodologies are extremely controversial, and there's been a lot of, you know, scientists who have looked at them and don't find them entirely credible, I have to say. But that being said, the idea of trying to sequester carbon in the soil, trying to farm in ways that don't release carbon and, in fact, absorb more carbon. You know, there's a lot of carbon in our soils, which are, you know, just sort of rotted plant material. Is very, very important. And so, yes, that's true. And a lot of people looking, how could we sort of store more carbon in soil?
So explain also, this is a really interesting part of your article, that it's possible that this concept of carbon dioxide removal, to which we don't have an answer totally yet, there's a lot of people working on it, but that the concept of it may already be worked into the formula, so to say, for things like the Paris Climate Accords. What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a huge body of research that goes into making up these reports from what's called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, and those sort of undergird a lot of the climate negotiations. So an international bunch of scientists come together and write these huge reports. And when the IPCC, When the world leaders sort of said, okay, we want to hold average global temperature increases to under 2 degrees Celsius, that's the stated, you know, goal of the Paris Accord, the scientists, you know, sort of had to look at, okay, what are the possible pathways in terms of, you know, transforming the world's energy systems, mm-hmm. that we could do that, so we could hold CO2 levels to, you know, under which they would, you know, cause 2 degrees of climate warming.
Yeah.
And when they did that, they found it was really, really, really hard. You basically had to stop using fossil fuels very quickly, very dramatically. Emissions had to fall, you know, starting really right now and very fast in order to keep it under that cap, unless you added this sort of, as some people called it, sort of magic ingredient of negative emissions. And then you could continue to emit carbon for a few decades more, as long as you were sort of committed to taking it out. Now, that got in there, I think a lot of people would say, without even the policymakers who are making these decisions really fully understanding it. Mm-hmm. So that is something that's just sort of coming out now, that the Paris Accord rests on these very, very, you know, dubious assumptions. And people are saying, scientists are saying, okay, if that's true, if that's in there, we really, really have to start getting working on these technologies because we're already depending on them, you know, even though they don't exist yet. So that's really why I wrote the piece.
So that's what's so interesting. It's that, and that was actually my next question, is that these, when all these world leaders did their photo op, they were signing something that counts on technology that doesn't really exist yet.
Yes, and I mean, that sounds astonishing to you, and it sounds astonishing to me, and I think it's astonishing to sort of everybody who learns about it, but it's unfortunately true.
Elizabeth Colbert is with us, staff writer for The New Yorker. We're taking your questions about this too. Negative carbon dioxide emissions, carbon dioxide removal. She wrote about it in The New Yorker this month. 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Keith, who is in Chaska, Little Falls. Hi, Keith. Go right ahead.
Hi. I heard her say that you have to heat calcium carbonate to release the carbon. And earlier she said that to heat something, you generally use fossil fuels. And so wouldn't you be creating more carbon dioxide by doing that as you release, free it up? Or are you using renewable energies to heat up the carbon, calcium carbonate? My second point is, isn't methane many times worse than carbon dioxide? And I was wondering what percentage of methane is causing the global warming problem compared to carbon dioxide. And if it is not much, isn't that significant? The carbon dioxide isn't that significant.
Yeah.
Isn't it just futile to even try to remove it?
Thanks so much, Keith. I think his first point there, Elizabeth, we had talked about it, is exactly that. The power you use to capture this should be renewable. Otherwise, it's not going to do much good.
Right, exactly. It is sort of premised on the idea of using of using renewable energy. And for example, this facility that I visited in British Columbia is using hydropower. So, you know, there are places in the world that have lots of renewable energy at this point. And solar, there are places in the world where there's so much solar energy being generated in very sunny times of the day that they're basically just dumping the power onto the grid. So, you know, there are possibilities already for using sort of excess renewable energy to run this process. But basically, it's a technology for the future. How's that? And now, as to the other point,
methane.
Methane is a very strong greenhouse gas, stronger than carbon dioxide. Methane levels are going up. It's pretty bad for potentially a variety of reasons, having to do with agriculture, having to do with fracking. But CO2, eventually methane sort of becomes CO2, so, you know, that's why we focus on everything. When we calculate all of these warming of potential, it's called the sort of warming potential, and it's done in what's called CO2 equivalent. So all of this is sort of converted, as it were, into one currency. It's like converting your, you know, euros into dollars. So you convert the warming potential of methane into what's called CO2 equivalents, and that's how you come to these figures. And we concentrate on taking CO2 out of the atmosphere because that is by far the more prevalent gas, and right now having, you know, the greatest impact.
So the other thought here is that I guess there's some version of this already happening sometimes on, for example, power plants, where it's a little more concentrated when it comes out of a smokestack, and you can capture it, and then it's piped underground. I have heard stories and read stories about CO2 being captured and piped underground. But I guess my big picture question is, you know, if the cat's out of the bag with CO2, does it matter whether it's above ground or below ground?
Well, it absolutely matters if it's above ground or below ground. I mean, it came from below ground, right? It was sitting there as, you know, oil or coal or natural gas. It was kind of out of circulation, and that's what we care about. We care about, is it, you know, trapping this heat in the atmosphere? We don't really care if it's underground, where it's, you know, basically out of, you know, out of sight, out of mind, as it were. It's not having an impact on the climate. And so we really do care about that. And the big question was that practical? Can you you know, for CO2 underground and will it stay there? And a lot of work has been done, and I think there's a pretty broad consensus that under the right circumstances, and not every geological formation has the right circumstances, but there are many, many parts of the U.S. that do, you can shove CO2 way, way under a lot of pressure, you know, 7,000 feet underground, and it will stay there.
Hmm.
Now, this whole idea of how we're going to take CO2 out of smokestacks and shove it underground, I think there's also a pretty broad consensus that that is also that's doable. The technology does exist. CO2 is much more concentrated in a smokestack, and so the energy demands are lower. It still takes a lot of energy, though. But taking that energy imposes a cost. And right now we're letting people, utilities, in this case we're talking about, dump that CO2 in the air for free. So no utility is going to take on that cost. And this is why that technology has stalled. And it's why just about everyone who studies this issue comes to the conclusion that you can't keep letting CO2 get dumped in the air for free. That's not going to get us anywhere. We have to have a price on dumping CO2 in the atmosphere.
So when you write an article about really interesting technologies happening, but you also then note that there are accords and treaties that rely on technology that doesn't exist yet, did you leave this article a little more hopeful or fearful about whether we can really address some of the more acute problems from climate change?
Well, I left this... I left this article feeling we have, you know, I went into it feeling we have a huge problem that we haven't grappled with. And I came out of it feeling very similarly because the whole issue gets down to, you know, we need to take very seriously cutting emissions and we need to, you know, not let people just dump CO2 in the air for free. And if we were to take the steps to create a clean energy economy, a lot of these new technologies would follow because there would be a lot of money in them. You know, so without that, without creating some kind of economic incentive, with continuing to sort of incentivize fossil fuel development as we're doing right now and as the current Congress and current administration are doing, that's taking us in exactly the opposite direction.
Elizabeth Colbert, a staff writer for The New Yorker, the article, "Can Carbon Dioxide Removal Save the World?" Elizabeth, it was so interesting to read. I'm so glad we could bring you on the show to talk about it more. Thanks.
Well, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. More online at mprnews.org.